Hello and welcome to the Adventure Audio Podcast. Today's episode is featuring DJ Jabig. He is a Montreal-based DJ, and he has embarked on two epic cycling journeys. The first one was a couple of years ago where he set a world record for the longest continual fixed gear bicycle ride in a single country. He covered over 17,000 kilometers in Canada, touching all three coasts. And again, to reiterate, that's not a fixed gear bicycle. That's not a single speed. That's a fixed gear bike, which is absolutely crazy. He set off from his home in Montreal and rode all around the country. He is now finishing up a second Canadian tour, which was originally set to be a world tour, which I believe he's circling back to, but had to come home. He was partway through Europe, I believe in Switzerland, when he needed to come home due to the pandemic back in March, but he didn't give up and continued to cycle around Canada on his open upper. And absolutely awesome journey that he's partaking in. We caught up with Jabig while he was back in his home taking a short rest in Montreal, and talk about both of those rides, which are absolutely crazy, and most importantly, his support of World Bicycle Relief, which is what he's doing this for. He's raising money for World Bicycle Relief, which is an organization which has donated over 500,000 bicycles in Africa. So totally awesome cause that he's riding for, and just a really, really cool guy. We loved chatting with him, and we hope that you enjoy the conversation just as much as we did. He is originally from Rwanda and immigrated to Canada about 18 years ago, so a ton of worldly experience, and also check out his music, which is awesome. I've checked it out streaming, and so is Tyler, and we've become big fans already. He talks a couple of times about how he's not a cyclist on the podcast, but I think anybody who's ridden a fixed gear bike 17,000 kilometers is definitely a cyclist. So he's self-deprecating, and it is a really fun conversation. So once again, thank you for listening. The podcast this week is brought to you by Algae Foods and their Impact Bar out of Canmore, Alberta, Canada. So the Impact Bar is a 55-gram bar packed with nutrients, and it's made of algae. So it's got 12 grams of protein, 22% of your daily value of iron, and they can be found at algiefoods.com. That's spelled algifoods.com. They're offering an Impact Bar taster, so you can try it before you buy it. And in addition to that, they're offering an exclusive discount code for Adventure Audio listeners. So if you go to algiefoods.com/Adventure Audio, you'll get 10% off your next order. We hope that you can check them out. Finally, thank you everybody for listening and for your support of the podcast. As we always say, the best ways for podcasts to grow are actually by word of mouth. It's much better than anything else that we could do, and we appreciate your efforts in that. So if there's something about the podcast that you think would be enjoyable for one of your friends or family members or a riding buddy or a running buddy, please pass that along. And we really appreciate that. Also, social media is an extremely powerful tool. So if you're able to like or share posts or ask us questions, engage with us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, we're super happy to hear from you. And if you're able to give us a positive rating or review on whatever podcast platform that you find the show, that goes a long way too. Thank you so much. And on to DJ Jabig.
Yeah, I originally heard about you in Canadian Cycling Magazine, and there's a couple of stories. There's a bunch of stories that I'd love to hear you tell. Obviously, you immigrated to Canada, originally from Rwanda, which I think we're the same age. I'm 41. Were you born in 1979? Yes, is that about right? Okay. So I'd love to hear about when you moved here. Heard about your journey currently across Canada. You're raising money for World Bicycle Relief, which is awesome. And then also heard about your original journey in 2016, crossing the country, and more than just crossing the country, on a fixed gear bike 1 year after you started cycling, which is totally crazy. So we need to talk about months. All that stuff.
Six months. Yeah. All right.
Take it way back. When did you move to Canada?
So I moved to Canada 18 years ago. So I've been a Canadian for many years. I was born in Rwanda, but grew up in Kenya and South Africa. And eventually, you know, my parents moved us here in Canada. And I rode a bike here and then, but I really never was into cycling. And in 2005, I actually walked by a bike shop, and I said, oh, let me just go see. And then there's a bike I really find, you know, from outside, there's a bike I really found very nice. So I walked in and I got it. But the people told me, we sell fixed gear bikes. I'm like, what is that? They explained to me how everything goes. Once, twice, thrice, and I couldn't understand it. And they're like, you know what? Why don't you take this bike and ride it around the block? And you'll understand what I mean. I rode it around the block and I fell. And I'm like, oh, this is so weird. But I like it because I like the fact that I was one with the bike. It felt like, you know, when I was pedaling the bike, I had more, I don't know. I just felt one with the bike and I felt it was more, it was smoother. So I got that bike. And as a DJ, I have a lot of, you know, DJs who work at night. And I realized that I really, until I got that bike, which was in 2015, sorry, I really don't remember what I used to do in my days before that. Because once I got that bike, I would just ride every day, all day. I would, you know, from Monday until Thursday, I would ride every day. I would go, I'd ride as far as I could in Montreal, even outside the city. Because Montreal is an island. And eventually, I would go so far that I would have to call one of my friends to come and pick me up. Because I never thought that when you plan for a ride, you have to ride for the trip back. And so I would go that far, and then before I would be like, oh my goodness, it's nightfall. Let me just turn around. But then it would be in the middle of the dark, in the middle of nowhere. And I'd have to call my friend, and he's like, where are you this time? And I actually didn't know where I was. I had to send him a location, and we'd figure out where, you know, and he'd just like be like, I'm here. Where? I don't know. Like, flash your lights. Oh yeah, I see you. Don't move. I'm coming, you know? And by the end of, so I got that back in around June. But by the time October came by, you know, some friends had told me about this application called Strava, and I just used it on my phone to log my mileage. And by the time October came by, I was looking at it, and I realized that I'd clocked 5,000 kilometers. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is almost from Vancouver to Montreal. And that's where the idea came. So technically, I almost crossed a country. So why not just cycle across Canada? And that's the problem with me, you know, I guess I have, that's why I stay away from anything that's addictive. When I like something and I do it, I go all out. So I decided, well, let me just cycle across Canada. But I knew if I waited for the next summer, you know, as a DJ, I travel a lot and there's always something coming up. But also there's the human element, I would just literally chicken out. I said, you know what, let me just do it in January. And I picked January for the simple reason that I had to wait for December. December is the most lucrative month for DJs, you know, with all the Christmas parties and also New Year's Eve. You know, I had a bunch of like, you know, local and international gigs booked. So I said, you know, let me just get through my, because some of these bookings are agreed upon in advance. So I had to respect the engagements. And also it was a way to put money aside to get going. So then in January, I said, oh, I'm out of here. On the 31st of January in 2016, I got on my bike and, you know, I got going. But it was a different bike because the one I had, I realized that I would need bigger tires and it didn't have enough, you know, clearance for tires. And also the one I had was very aggressive, you know, even the mechanics and everyone who knew me, they couldn't understand how I was riding such a bike. Montreal over, because I was doing like, Century Rise, I was riding far, and they were, you know, this is the ride just to look cool, you know, to just look cool. Most you can do 50 kilometers, but you are there doing some crazy distances. And when I got the one with it was a Cinelli Mash, you know, cyclocross, single speed, and I said, well, I'm just going to do it on a fixed gear because that's what I'm used to. People said, you know, you can get a bike with gears, and I'm like, no, I read on the internet that, you know, a fixed gear bike has less complications because in the winter, you know, you're not going to have problems with the gears and the, because I can't even fix, to this day, I can barely fix a tire. So I didn't want to try anything. But people told me, why don't you try single speed? And I said, what is that? Well, it's the same thing, but the pedals stop moving. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to stick to what I'm used to. But they said, what about the mountains? I'm like, you know what? I guess I'll change my ratio. Or if I don't, well, I walk up the mountains. And so on January, I really got on my bike and I got going. And, you know, the rest was fun. I mean, it wasn't fun. It was fun because it was stupidity. You know, when you're stupid, you don't know that life can be better. Now that I ride a bike with gears, I actually realize how much better life is. But at the time, everything I had. But to be honest, it was so fun riding a fixed gear bike because, I mean, for me, there's something I tell people, for instance, I'd rather climb on a fixed gear bike than climb on a bicycle with gears. Because fixed gear, you just have to push down and then the pedals come back. And once you have your rhythm, you know, you just have to maintain it. And yes, the problem with fixed gear is that if you stop mid-hill, you know, to get that momentum is impossible. And would I do it again on a fixed gear bike? Perhaps not, but not because it's impossible, but just because it's faster with gears. And, you know, because the thing with fixed gear, I would have to stop every now and then to rest my knees because it was taxing on the knees. Whereas with this trip, I just did it with gears and I could just go on and on. But then here's the irony. On this trip, I was more tired and more exhausted than on a fixed gear bike because I realized that with a bike, you know, with a bike with gears, you can go further and faster. So I did. But the problem is that I end up doing bigger distances with less breaks. So right now that I'm coming through Montreal taking a break, I feel that I'm more exhausted than when I was riding across Canada. Because I rode 1 month and a half. The first time I rode it in 6 months. So right now my body is completely beat. So that's the story in a nutshell.
Because you're going a lot farther every day now.
Yes, but also because of the pandemic, I realized quickly I would, you know, my first ride, I was riding some distances that when I was riding my fixed gear bike, but because I had the gears, my days would be shorter. So let's say, for instance, I would start at the usual, let's say 8 o'clock, but this time I would get to my destination by 1 p.m. Whereas on a fixed gear bike, I would get there at around 4. And then at 1 p.m. in the middle of pandemic, there's nothing to do because everything is closed. I can't go in the city and mingle because I don't want to catch something. And you can't go to tourist attractions because they're all shut down. So then I had to sit down from, you know, in my motel room from 1 o'clock until the next day. And I realized, and also given that it was this time I was doing in summer, I realized that between 1 and 9, when the sun sets, I could have done double the distance instead of just sitting around. So then I started riding more and more, but then the problem is that I was riding more and more and faster because that was more exhausting physically.
Right. Now, to go back to the fixed gear decision for a minute, which again, I think is like down the mountains. You just like, were you just taking your legs completely off the pedals and letting them spin? Because like, it's hard to allow your legs to keep up with how fast it'd be rotating.
Yeah, so only when the hills were short, we'll just unclip and let the bike take me, you know. But most of the time, people think that when you have a fixed gear bike, most of the people don't have brakes. That is true. I still have both brakes. And that is exactly why I got my brakes. The only time I would use my brakes was downhill, because then I could regulate my speed. Because especially if it was downhill with, you know, and it didn't look very certain and very safe, then I would stay clipped and then I would just slow down and pretty much keep up with the cadence. Whereas, you know, but sometimes when I'm feeling, I don't know, brave, now I call it stupid, I will just let go and just go. And one time indeed, I was going downhill and between two mountain passes, and then I go through a bridge, which was wide open, and the wind pushed me. And when the wind pushed me, I realized that I couldn't correct because the wind was so strong. But because I didn't have my legs so I had moved my center of gravity and I moved. The wind blew me so much that I went to the other side of the highway and there was coming traffic. And I managed to go further. I'm like, I'm going to get hit. And I rode so far out that I was riding on the opposite shoulder, going in the wrong direction. But so very quickly I learned to just keep my legs clipped in.
That's wild. So then, and now, and you didn't just go across the country. You went all the way to you went to Tuktoyaktuk.
Yes. Because technically speaking, you know, Canada is one of the few countries that has three coasts. You know, we have the Atlantic, the Pacific, but also the Arctic Ocean. And most, you know, and even across Canada, most people start from Vancouver and they stop in Halifax. But when they stop in Halifax, which is true because Halifax is the Atlantic Ocean, but then there is a piece of Canada still left, which is called Newfoundland. It's a province called Newfoundland and Labrador, but it's the Newfoundland part. And that ends in St. John's. So I said, you know what, I'm going to do all of it, but also I want to do coast to coast to coast because that's what Canada is. And so I started in Montreal, wrote to St. John's, Newfoundland, and then I turned around and I went to Vancouver. And then from Vancouver, it goes even further. You have to cross to Vancouver Island and go all the way to Victoria Island, you know, where the, you know, because Victoria is a city where the Trans-Canada starts. And then I went further north. And so what happens is that in winter, that was 4 years ago, before the only way you could go in the north in winter was by ice road. You know, you go to one city called Inuvik, and then the way to go from Inuvik to Tuktoyaktuk was by ice road. So basically, it's the river that freezes and it becomes a road. And for winter, it's the only time it's accessible by road. In summer, it's completely not accessible. Wow. So then I said, I'm going to do the ice road too, which I did at minus 40. And it was, you know, it was quite a challenge. And but now there's a road, they built a road, you know, off land. So now people can access the road, you know, 24/7, you know, and that was actually the plan of this trip. My trip was, because when I finished in the Arctic Ocean, you know, and I said and announced on social media that I was done, everyone was clowning me saying, oh, you should ride back home. And I said, are you guys crazy? No ways. I'll never do that again in my life. So from Tuktoyaktuk, I hitched a ride to Inuvik. And then from Inuvik, I flew to Dawson. From Dawson, I flew to Whitehorse. And then from Whitehorse, I flew to Ottawa because there's an airline, you know, Air North that flies all that. So, you know, they heard about my story and they said, you know what, the least we can do is send you back home, you know, and they sent me back home. So the trick was to start from Tuktoyaktuk this time and then go from Tuktoyaktuk, go all the way to Victoria, and then Victoria go to St. John's, which was the original trip, but in reverse. But the issue was that in Northwest Territories and Yukon, the two territories that I would have to cross, all of them, you know, required me to quarantine for 14 days. So, you know, one
each
after one.
Time.
Yeah,
right?
Each time. That's a whole month.
Yeah.
And so before coming back to Canada, I was actually in the process of cycling around the world. And I was in Europe. And the Canadian government told me, just come back home, which I did. And I did 14 days, my first 14 days in March. And on the 15th day, I tried to ride a bike. I couldn't even go. After 2 kilometers, I got off my bike and I pushed it back home because I was so exhausted because I really didn't leave the house for 14 days. So that's why I told myself, if I go up north there and I sit there for 1 month, forget it. It's a month that's wasted. So that's why I decided to start from Victoria and then head towards the Atlantic Ocean. But now the challenge is that the Atlantic Ocean, they have a bubble, meaning there are the provinces in there, you know, there are four provinces there, which are New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, and Newfoundland and Labrador. They pretty much shut down from the rest of Canada, and nobody can go through unless you're a resident of those provinces. So, and now Quebec today, they are going to announce a second lockdown. So that means that I might have to end my trip at the border of Quebec and New Brunswick and call it a day.
Right. So you've got you have a decision to make right now. Sorry, I'm just moving around.
No problem.
So you have a bit of a decision to make.
Well,
how you're going to approach us.
My decision is to go through, but legally I can't. You know, yes, of course, if my trip wasn't documented online and if I didn't have like a sponsors and if I were not supporting charity and basically if I didn't have to be a responsible citizen, I could have just gone through in the woods because, you know, that's the beauty of riding a gravel bike. You can just, you know, they're not guarding all the path. I could have just snuck in and went all the way, but it's irresponsible because the whole point, you know, they're not putting this for fun. They're doing it to keep everyone safe and, you know, it would be stupid, but many cyclists told me to do that, but I told them, hey, you can afford to do that. I can't. But you know, but the polite version is like, no, I need to be responsible. But between you and me, it's just because I'm a public figure and I would get busted very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that that's probably wise, but a tough pill to swallow. And like, where in Europe were you when you had to come home?
So my trip was in Switzerland, and I was actually getting ready to cross into Italy. And then I heard of the borders closing down, and I was like, I thought the borders were gone, but I was surprised at how quickly, you know, people have a good memory, and all the countries suddenly knew where the borders were. So then I retreated back, you know, and then I was in the UK retreating there. I said, okay, let me just wait it out there and see what's going on. And then the UK started getting bad, and the whole, and all the, I could literally see every day of countries that were shutting down and all the borders. And I said, and I told myself, ah, I'll just wait it out. But then the Canadian government started calling people, and they called me and they told me, we would prefer it if you got home, because if something happens, we can't, it's very hard to help you abroad. So just go home. And I was like, okay, let me just come back home quickly. And then within 1 month, I'm going to be back. Well, We all know how the pandemic went. And it seems like nobody is getting back anywhere anytime soon. Although I'm working out something else right now. And after this trip across Canada, I'm already cooking up something. So, you know, dot, dot, dot.
That's great.
Okay.
That's great. So can you tell us about the charity that you support? I think it's fantastic.
So there's World Bicycle Relief is a charity that, you know, provides bicycles to children and frontline healthcare workers in rural Africa. But also they're also starting in South America. And it was actually founded by one of the founders of SHRAN, who during the what is it called again? Man, I forget the name. The big flood that happened in Asia many years ago. The tsunami, yeah, tsunami. During the tsunami, yeah, he started during the tsunami, and he was providing bikes, and then it got turned into a full-fledged charity. So basically, what they do is, one of the reasons some children cannot go to school in rural Africa is just because school is far. I mean, all of us here on this podcast, and then most people listening, you know, we all ride bikes, and we know that sometimes we ride bikes to be lazy. You know, for me, if I have a choice between walking 5 minutes or riding them, I ride by bike. But going to school, you know, and like the fact that somebody realized that if you give children, you know, if you provide them with bicycles, they can actually get to school and get an education and have a fighting chance, you know, and they did it. And what I like about World Bicycle Relief is that they do not take bicycles from somewhere and then go dump them. They actually send the bicycle parts in Africa, and they form a local mechanic. And his job is to put those back together and to also maintain them when they have a problem. So they create a business, and they create a local economy with these bicycles. And the children are not just randomly given bicycles. You know, it's a pledge between them and World Bicycle Relief, where they have to, you know, maintain a certain grades in class. So it's not just a freebie.
Okay.
But you know, and they work hard, and you know, they work hard, and then eventually the bicycle belongs to them. So it's not like a donation or charity. You know, it's classified as charity, but it's really more like I call it an empowering tool. You know, they go there to empower the communities. And then right now with the pandemic, you know, because they were also giving to frontline workers. I mean, I'm going to give you a quick example. For instance, a nurse who, midwife, before could only see 5 patients a day. But with a bicycle, now she can see 15. And, you know, and the fact that, you know, most of the issues is mortality during pregnancy is a big thing in those parts of the world. So now some simple, you know, the fact that they can see a healthcare professional, you know, makes it easier for the local population. And now with the pandemic, you know, the frontline workers can get to their patients, and, you know, and they don't have to take buses, you know, and we all know that, like I said, we all ride bikes here. The ultimate social distancing tool, I mean, vehicle is a bicycle. So I heard what they were doing, and I said, you know what, because I had the idea to actually do that. But then I said, I know I'm a smart guy, but there might be somebody out there doing the same thing. And when I went on the website, I read what they were doing, and I reached out to them and said, listen, I ride bicycle for fun because I'm a DJ. I ride my bicycle for fun. And for me, I'm about to go on a big trip. And I'd like to not just make it about me and my glory. I'd like to raise that awareness and, you know, raise awareness and raise funds for you. Obviously, they were happy. And, you know, that's how they started the way the partnership. And, you know, and so far I've been raising the money and, you know, I don't touch anything. The website is 100% World Bicycle Relives. The only thing I do is promote and raise awareness about them. And then obviously, you know, by strange coincidence, some of the cycling companies that support World Bicycle Relief heard about my trip and they jumped on board to help me out. So it was weird how, you know, doing something nice allowed me to get some nice companies to come along and pretty much give me stuff that's usually very expensive.
That's awesome. Yeah, what an awesome cause it is. So who are some of the companies that stepped up to help you?
Well, SRAM and Zip pretty much founded World Bicycle Relief, so they helped me out. And Open Cycle, they actually don't sponsor anybody. They don't, you know, because it's a company founded by Gerard and Andy, which are, you know, the big names in the cycling industry, and decided to go small. So they really don't want to be bothered with sponsorship and this and that. And yet, you know, Andy heard what I was doing. I mean, somebody contacted him on my behalf, and he said, you know what, we don't do sponsorship. We don't do anything, none of that. But it's a very nice cause we support, you know. We wish him luck. And then one day, I think he read more about it, and he said, hang on a minute. This guy's a DJ. This guy is not a cyclist. This guy actually has, because apparently some people will say that they're about to embark on something to get free stuff, and then they said the last minute, I know I'm not doing it. But apparently, you know, most of the brands that, you know, that support me, you know, once they saw the film, because there's a film that came out in there about my bicycle journey. Once they saw the film, they're like, okay, this guy is for real. If he went all the way up there to the Arctic in the winter, it's not the world that's going to scare him. So, you know, but also, again, you know, I'm a DJ and I'm not a cyclist, you know, per se. I just ride bicycles. So it was, for once, it was something different for a change. And also, you know, I know that right now, like, you know, diversity is a big thing. But it was also like a bonus. For once, it wasn't the same, you know, it wasn't the same person who looked the same, you know, it was someone different for a change. But it wasn't, oh, let's help him because he's different. It was, oh, the fact that he's different is also a good marketing, you know, gimmick. I mean, if it's a gimmick or campaign or whatever, you all get what I mean.
It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's a gimmick if you're doing good, right? But, yeah. And I mean, what a story to support. This African-Canadian DJ from Montreal who's cycled to the Arctic on a fixed gear bike. Like,
yeah, exactly. That's how it was. Yeah. That's how the story was. There was like what? A DJ? What?
Yeah.
Like African-born, like on a fixed gear. What? And then it's like in winter. Oh, yeah. What? And then like all the way to the Arctic question. And I realized that some people, some of the people who supported my ride, the brands, they told me that the only reason they said yes was because they wanted to get to know me, because they wanted to hear why I did it. And they're like, wow, I guess I was stupid. That's what I was, you know, because now that I know better, if you told me to do it again, I would think twice before doing it. But back then, I guess I said, hey, I have a lot of time on my hands. Why not? So, yeah, so I think it's, you know, I mean, yes, I can say here that I can sit here and say that, yeah, it's because it's a very, you know, yeah, and then, of course, it's the noble cause. But it's, I guess it's the package that seems interesting. And to some of the, you know, some of the sponsors, they like it. But also there's some sponsors who target real cyclists and they're like, okay, this is a little bit too left field for us. You know, it's so weird. It's like so unusual, you know, that's not for us, you know what I mean? So we're going to stick with what we're used to, you know, the proper cyclist going very fast. And, you know, because when I ride around, you know, when I ride, I mean, not this time, but usually when I ride around the world, I'm a tourist. I use the bicycle to get from place to place, but I was actually on a DJ tour. So I was going from place to place DJing and performing, and then I would get back on my back and keep on riding. But some sponsors found that very weird. They're like, no, that's not proper cycling. And I'm like, you realize that probably 90% of your clients are not like Tour de France cyclist. You know, it's the average person who has a normal 9-to-5 job, who rides a bicycle. I am that. It's just that, you know, my 9-to-5 is 9-to-5 at night. from 9 in the evening at 5 in the morning. And I'm a DJ, and a DJ is a profession like others, you know what I mean? I get paid, I can get fired, it's a job. And it's just that I'm just using a bicycle to get around, not flying, you know, because usually I fly around the world, but now I go to ride around the world and doing some charity work. Yeah. But anyway, I don't care, because the ones who got it, and they're even more involved than I am. And sometimes they're telling me, don't you want to go here, and I'm like, guys, I'm on a bicycle, I can't just go. You know, like, for instance, there's one company there in the middle of Sweden that said, oh, why don't you come visit us? And I'm like, you want me to ride 1,000 kilometers up there and 1,000 back just to say hi? I'm like, no, I think we're just going to do a FaceTime.
That's awesome. Great.
So would you say that your cycling helps your job as a DJ?
I'm already established. I've been established for too long. The only thing it does is,
getting you maybe think better, or think more clearly, or I don't know, come up with different ideas.
No, not really. It doesn't. Right? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. What it does, though, it's I find that it's easier to get what I want with my peers. Business wise, it's because people now, people say, okay, you know what? If I approach some musicians and I tell them this is what I like to do, they're like, hang on a minute, aren't you the guy who cycled across Canada on a fixed gear bike? So in a way, it's, and the fact that, many DJs follow that, and the fact that, and sometimes can be like, oh my gosh, I was telling my kid about you. Let me introduce my child. My child would like to talk to you because, my child cycles and this and that. And they're like, but in my mind, I'm like, well, I actually wanted to call you if I could use your music and if I could get the copyrights. And they're like, yeah, don't worry about that. You've got them. Go on. But, and I'm like, okay. So I found that it adds to the DJ, because DJs, we have a very bad stereotype of being just, womanizers, drug addicts, party people, and we're just selfish. And people said, oh, he's this guy, he's actually doing something that even cyclists, even proper cyclists don't even do. And so it adds a little bit, of like a je ne sais quoi, I guess the proper word in French would be panache. But the guys in cycling, you guys took the panache word and stole it and took it somewhere else. But it's the panache, that's where panache comes in. It adds a little bit of something extra.
I love it. That's great. Yeah, I saw that that short film about you. It was awesome. I can't remember the name.
Escape.
Escape, yeah. That's great. What is it, like 7-8 minutes long? And just
It's 8 minutes. And it's crazy, because in 8 minutes, they were able to tell the story. And for me, it was perfect. Because at first, I was feeling like, okay, you guys came all this way, and you're just going to record, you're just going to make an 80-minute film. But the director told me, sometimes some of the most powerful stories are short. Yeah. And what is there to explain? The visuals are going to do the job. Just tell your story, and I'm going to take care of the visuals. And there it is. And I realized that in 8 minutes, I was actually able to tell the whole story, and that's what it was, and I'm really grateful for that. And if you saw the film, so when I was riding, I didn't know what was going on. What I saw, it was just snowbanks, and that's it. Later on, when I saw the film and I saw the drone view, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know I was that far from the land. I would have never ventured there, because I was literally in the middle of a river. So if the thing cracked, and it did crack, that's why I kept falling. Because it would be cracking, If I fell in there, that would be the end of it. So I kept falling, because trucks that would come maybe a kilometer ahead, they would create a wave under the water, and then the wave would take me out. So it's as if somebody drowned. It's as if you were on a trampoline, and somebody, if you're standing still, and somebody jumped. Wow. Well, they're gonna make you lose your balance. So that's why I kept falling, because it would be like a mini earthquake under there.
Oh, the visual of it. I was sweating watching it. It's stressful.
Yeah, it was pretty, right now, and the irony is right now it's, we're getting into autumn, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm so cold. Yeah. And then I have to remind myself, hey, you rode in winter at minus 40. Minus 40 is minus Celsius at minus 40. That's where they join. And you were okay, you survived. it's not this little cold that's going to make you, you know, it's not going to kill you. Just toughen up.
Yeah,
I like that. I saw your boots. You had those big boots. Lake Meadows and
yes,
a big helmet and a face shield. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's you have to go winter all the way, because basically in such temperatures, you have to protect your skin, because it doesn't matter. Within 10 minutes, that skin is burning, and you might have to, you know, if it's your fingers or your toes, you're going to have to chop them off. That's it. So because it truly burns, it's funny, but the cold does burn, like as if it was fire. So every day it took me 10 minutes to get dressed to make sure that rule number one, do not let any skin be exposed. And then when I was ready to step outside, that's when I wanted to go pee. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, now I have to go get undressed. I have to do everything all over again.
And where would you stay along when you're so far north up there in the Arctic?
So up there in the Arctic, so I just kept riding, because I didn't, at one stage I got to a stage where it was so isolated. And I said, you know what, I'm going to stop. I'm going to have to stop because I get to the Arctic Ocean, because some of the distances are too long and I can't camp. So I'm going to stop. And then along the way, because basically when I ride across Canada, all my big rides, I don't camp because I don't like sleeping outside. I've never done it. Yeah. And it scares me. I'm scared of wild animals. You know, I'm a coward. Yes, I know. But you know what? And
I wouldn't say that.
You know what I mean? And I signed up to cycle across Canada, not to haul a tent, you know, food. I can't even cook for myself properly. So I wasn't going to try two big things at once, you know, like learn how to camp and also how to learn to ride long distances. So my strategy was to stay at people's houses, you know, and or because it's a website called Warm Showers and couch surfing, and it's basically communities of cyclists that welcome other cyclists, you know. And I also said, you know what, I have been riding. I mean, I've been, because I live in Montreal, and Montreal is a very touristic city. And in my 18 years living here, I've hosted over 200 people, and I said, you know,
really?
What? It's time to cash in my hosting card, and
your also,
exactly, and go stay at people's houses. And overall, when I was cycling across Canada the first time, 115 families welcomed me, and I really said that maybe it's only maybe 5 times that I have to take a motel, only. But for the rest of the time, it was cyclists. But also the fact that I'm a pretty well-known DJ. So sometimes my fans, you know, around the country would say, oh, we listen to music all the time and it's free. The least we can do is host you. And then once you get somebody who lives in those remote areas, they all know each other around there because they have to know each other to survive. So then they'll tell me, oh, yeah, if you go further, there's a friend of ours. We called him. He can host you. But then I ran out of that luck when I was far north because there is literally nobody out there.
Yeah.
So one of the families I stayed with, you know, they said, you know what, the wife got so worried. She's like, you know what, I'm going to send my husband along with his RV, and he's going to support you for the last 1,000 kilometers.
Wow.
Those were the last one. And so one day I was riding nearing the north, and then I hear a big truck behind me. But I'm like, man, I heard this guy 20 minutes ago. Because when you're out there, you can hear a car coming. You can hear it, and then by the time it overtakes you, it's easily half an hour later. Because there's nothing. You can hear, you know, you just hear, there's nothing. And you can, and most of the time it's the mountain passes. So half an hour is actually not very far. He's just in the valley trying to get up north. But then I'm like, where did that guy disappear? I heard the car coming. And I know there's no way out because it's a one-way road. There are no exits. Where is he? And I'm like, my gosh, did he have an accident? And then I turn around and I see a big RV. And I'm like, oh, Bob, there you are. I'm like, so it took him, he rode what, 3,000 kilometers to come and support me for 1,000 kilometers. And then he drove back because he didn't want the river to start melting. So when I go to the north, you know, I drove back and then I stayed at the hotel and then he drove back and I flew back. So he supported me and I'll never forget him. Even right now, he was like, well, you know, when I was supposed to do the second, you know, when I did the second trip, he was willing to go up there north with me because he said, I want to see it in summer. I've seen it in winter. So now he's like, okay, next year, you know, we're going to have to do it again. And next year, actually, I'm planning to go again. And some people are interested in coming with me. So I'm going to do a little bit of a group ride if people are willing to. So yes, so my friend Bob supported me until the end. Otherwise, it would have been impossible. And the funny thing is just, I just needed him for 300 kilometers. 300 kilometers. And then after when, and then the cities again were, you know, we were further north in the Arctic, then it was easier to get to, then I could ride the 200 kilometers easily. But those 300 kilometers, I needed him. And oh my goodness. And I'm so glad he was there. And that's when I realized that actually, it took me until the end of my ride to realize that the hardest part was not the cycling, it was the logistics. Oh, yeah. Because when Bob came to be with me, I did not have to worry about anything. I would just get up in the morning, get on my bike and ride. He'd meet me halfway, give me food. And then every now and then he'd just meet up with me and then give me food. I didn't have to figure out where am I spending night there. And I realized, oh, this is why people do the supporting thing. You know, I mean,
right.
And I'm already talking about the way I was doing it was already easy, meaning I was doing the credit card touring. I was going to hotels and this and that. But now I didn't have to worry about, oh, I have to be, because, you know, if you booked a hotel, you have to go to the hotel. But when I was supported, I would ride, and then I was like, you know what, today I'm sick and tired of it. And then I'll stop right there. And then we'd set up camp, and then we'd just relax over there. And then in the morning, I'd wake up at, because it was the further north I got, the day, you know, the longer the days went. So the sun would set at 2 o'clock and then wake up at 4. So I would wake up at 5. And then ride until 5 in the morning, until 11 in the evening, you know. And that's how I was, towards the end, that's how I was able to make a lot of distance, you know. I was just, but the fact that I didn't have to worry about anything, I mean, the guy would meet me, he would meet with me with hot tea. And I would just stand and, you know, hot tea. Or he would just meet up with me and then say, hop in the car. And then I would hop into the pickup and just sit there for 5 minutes while I warmed up my hands. And I was like, oh, this is so easy. I just have to ride my bike. So now as I get going, I realize that, you know, now that I'm making a name for myself, my future trips, I'm going to try my very best to have them supported. Because at the end of the day, my mission is to ride a bike. It's not to camp around Canada or across Canada or around the world or around wherever I want to go. I just want to ride my bike.
And a morale boost to have somebody there at the end of the day, right?
Yeah. And it's, I mean, he was so good. He would, like sometimes I would come I'd just walk into his RV. So this is a man, he came all the way from Lord knows where, like from far. And I'm in his RV, I'm in a nasty mood because I was cold and this and that. But he would just be in his own little corner. He's like, okay, I can see that you're not in a good mood. So then he would put the food aside. He would get the, you know, he would get the shower ready. And he would just go further into his RV and, you know, and read his little book. Until I got warmed up and I ate, and then it's like, hey, so you had a tough day today. And then we talk about it, and then I'll be like, okay, you know, it was really so nice of him. And, you know, I mean, we speak often, and, you know, and he keep telling me, when is the next adventure? I'm like, Bob, I'm not kidding myself, for you. Just be patient.
That's great. I saw on Instagram now you're planning on redoing that section now in June of 2021.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so you're going to go.
Yeah, so that's what I was planning, and many people want to, you know, because most Canadians can't travel abroad, so a lot of Canadians are interested in doing it with me, and I told them, okay, you know, you're coming, but first of all, I'm going to need to vet people, because it's not an easy ride. It's really not an easy ride, because it's 1,000 kilometers of gravel, and then you have, like, mosquitoes, and you have all these, and you literally have, like, grizzlies and bears and this and that, so, and then there are no luxuries, so... And then the irony of life is that the people who can afford to take 2 weeks of their lives to go up there are people who usually tend to be wealthy. But people who tend to be wealthy, they tend to be, how do I say, demanding. And up there, nature doesn't care about how much money you have.
Yeah.
You know, so I keep telling them, yes, I have a tendency to make it look easy, but it's not. You need to have it's not even physically anyone can ride it, but it's mentally, you know, knowing that you might have to go 3 days without showering, or you might have to, you know, or you might have to ride 6 hours with just one bidon of water. And also, if you're tired, tough luck, you're tired, but you're going to have to keep going because nobody's coming for you in the middle of nowhere. So these are the things that I tell the people who are interested. And usually, because I tell them, you know, on social media, the reason I really don't want to give the sad story or the and the nasty story, it's just for the simple reason that my mother is on social media. And I don't want to scare her about some of the adventures I had, you know? So that's the reason. I tell people, if you want to know the truth, ask me, I'll tell you. You know, it's not...
Ask me offline.
Yeah, ask me offline. Initially, that's what I do. So when I interview people who want to join me, I really paint the worst picture. Because I tell them, even I would get in a bad mood with myself. And I'm usually, I mean, okay, I'm a moody guy sometimes, but I will just be in a bad mood because it's just tiring. It just brings the, it's you, a nature, and a bicycle.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not a joy ride. It's not something fun. It's something that's out of your comfort zone. So you really need to make sure that you know what you're signing up for. You know, you might have to eat crappy food and you might have to sleep on the floor. It's not fun, you know what I mean? And so far, everyone is like, so when are we leaving again? I'm like, okay, I like it. I like it a lot.
But then
the one thing I should mention, yes, if we're in a group of people riding together, of course it's going to be easier because of what you just said earlier, the morale boost. And then also, you know, yes, it's a gravel road, but if you get people drafting, it just makes it easier.
Yeah,
definitely. Will you go west to east again then too? Or will you complete that section?
I mean, I understand that it's my second time riding across Canada. And I know that even when I was riding across Canada this time, I didn't go everywhere. And most of my friends were like, okay, it's okay. It's okay. We'll see you on your third time crossing. I'm like, okay, relax, people. I'm not becoming the Canadian, you know, the trans-Canadian, you know, like traveler. That's not my signature travel. So, but what I'll do is I'll ride from Vancouver to Dodson City, where the gravel road starts. And have everyone meet me up there, because overall the whole trip will take maybe 40 days, but not everyone has 40 days because people have families, people have, you know, jobs. I mean, whatever. So what I will do is I will ride all the way to Dawson, which is and then people will join me for the last 1,000 kilometers, and the last 1,000 kilometers because it's so we can do it in about 10 days. So that's what I'm going to do and it's also a way for me to cheat because that's how I'm going to train. Because so far, the people that are riding with me, I've ridden with them, most of them, they're very fast cyclists, you know, and I'm a very slow cyclist, as people see. Whenever people ride with me, you know, I tell them I'm slow, but they realize, oh, this guy wasn't being like, he wasn't sandbagging. It's true. He's, you know, for me, my average speed is between 23 and when I have tailwind, it's 25. And people think this guy's full of crap, but then they come with me, they ride, and they want to go at 30 kilometers an hour. I'm like, excuse me, I'm dying, you know. And I'm also, the difference between you and me is that I have to do this for the next
again
month.
And again,
exactly.
And again. That's right, yeah,
you know. But this is where things are going to get interesting because most of the people I've ridden with are people who are very fast cyclists. But when you're doing these big journeys, the trick is not to the speed. Yes, the only thing speed is good for is that you get to be done quickly. You know, but you need to be able to recover fast too, because the trick with these kind of trips is the ability to do it over and over every day for in this instance it would be 10 days, but across Canada, like for instance right now, it took me almost a month and a half to do it. Like, you know, I rode 5 days a week. That's what I did. And I was riding big distances between 100 kilometers and 200 every day. And, you know, and this is where it gets interesting. And that's where I am. And this is the one thing I tell people. It's like, if you want to see if you can do it, go ride 3 consecutive centuries on gravel. And not like 3 consecutive, meaning day after day after day. You start on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. If you can do them, you're going to be good. But it's consecutive. And try to do them. Try to do them at the same speed. You think you're gonna do them. If you can survive that, you're okay. If you can't, well, perhaps you're gonna appreciate riding at 21 kilometers an hour. Because that's the thing. The thing is that I find now that I have gears, the first I go, yes, I am done earlier, but I'm so tired that the next day when I get back on the bike, I can feel my body aching. But when I stick to my usual speed, I can get to my location. Yes, I'll get there. Let's maybe like an hour or two. It's actually mostly, it's usually mostly by an hour and a half, most extra. But then I can actually carry on with other things. You know, my day is okay. I can, I'm not dead. I can actually carry on with my life. And I'm like, for an hour and a half, it's not worth it. If I can, if I finish maybe 6 hours earlier, so maybe I would kill myself with speed. But if I'm going at 30 kilometers and now, you know, at 30 kilometers, and then I save an hour and a half, but that hour and a half requires 6 hours of extra recovery, it's not worth
right.
it.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not worth it, you know.
And you have to know yourself and know and find all those balances, right? In order to keep going.
Yeah. My personal rule,
I think
my
it's
personal
awesome.
Rule, my personal rule is I should be able to keep a conversation, you know, even with myself. If I can't speak, it means I'm out of breath. So I slow
going
down.
Too fast. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. So Javig, you've obviously been bit by the cycling bug. You know, you bought a bike in 2015 and now you're riding, you know, doing
crazy
laps.
Distances.
You're basically doing laps around the world in Canada. You know, so what, like, what's your favorite thing about it? I mean, I think I have an idea, but you know, I'd like to hear your words. You know,
I mean,
like, just exploring. Do you like exploration?
I really, people ask me that question and they expect a philosophical answer. And I really don't know. And I really don't have it.
Yeah.
But it's, I just feel free. You know, that's the only way I can feel. I feel free. And then, and then it's, I guess it's the dopamine. You know, it's constantly happiness. And it's not for, you know, I'm not one of those guys who sees a mountain and says, oh, yeah, great. It's a challenge. I climb this mountain. I feel great. You know what I mean? I'm not one of those, you know.
Yeah.
If I could do it flat, yes, I'd be, you know, I'd be happy. But then I also know that, I know that riding flat, you know, hurts your bum. Every now and then you need to be able to get out of the saddle.
Yeah.
For me, it's just the fact of being outside, being outdoor, breathing air. Because I'm also a professional DJ. I feel that I spend my 20s and my 30s in nightclubs, living at night. And now I get to be outside, you know, and especially in a pandemic. Like right now in Montreal, I'm in Montreal transiting. And I'm stuck in my house because I can't go outside because there's so many people. You know, and, you know, you're trying to limit your exposure to people. But so now I realize, oh, my goodness, it's actually in the city that I'm trapped. Because when you are there, you know what? I can be outdoor. I can sit on top of a mountain and just sit there a bit by myself. You know, and then you see somebody, but the somebody is easily, you know, like he's very far. There's no risk. So there's really no risk of catching COVID or anything. But first and foremost is this, you know, this, oh, the world is mine. You know, this invincibility that I had when I was a kid, you know, the world is mine, you know. And, you know, until a dog runs after you. But that's a whole different story.
That's incredible. What an inspiring story. So where can, before we let you go, where can people follow along with your journey and where can they donate?
So to donate, it's a bike for bikes. So bike, you know, for the number four, and then bikes, you know, .com. And then it's going to redirect to the World Bicycle Relief's website where you can make a donation. So 100% of that money goes to World Bicycle Relief. I don't touch anything. It's not even my website. I don't control anything they do. And they're very highly rated. They're very efficient. You know, they really do everything great. They don't have like a big office like most companies do. You know, most of their staff, they were even working remotely before even that. And, you know, and so they really are very efficient with the way they, you know, they use the funds that people donate. Because let's agree, even if anyone is giving $1, everyone works hard for the $1. So, you know, World Bicycle Relief, they're very good at putting that money to good use. And to follow my trip, you know, the best way is Instagram. Actually, the only way is Instagram. It's at Jabig, you know, J-A-B-I-G. And then they can follow what I'm up to. And of course, the way I am, when I started my first journey, you know, I mean, sorry, when I started this journey across Canada, I was already planning the next one. And so far, the next one, it seems interesting. But I'm just waiting to see because this one is, I think you might have to interview me again very soon. Let me put it that way.
I feel like we will. I feel like this has to be part one.
Yeah,
because I'm intrigued and I can already tell it's going to be awesome and big. So
yeah, I mean,
we want to know about it.
Yeah.
And SRAM and Zip and Openness, they've been big supporters of you as well.
They're big supporters, but you know, they're really right. Big supporters.
Awesome.
You know, sometimes they'll tell me, you need this. I'm like, what is that? Okay, whatever. I'm like, I don't even know what that is. I'm like, well, trust me. Like, for instance, recently, I mean, the funny part, I was like, you're going to be riding some gravel? They're like, yeah, well, I think you need this handlebar. What is it? Well, this handlebar, it's a little bit flared. What is flared? No, flared, it means it's a little bit bent. I'm like, what is the purpose? Well, when you go downhill, you're going to feel the stability. I'm like, what? They're like, okay, you know what? Just send us an address. I'm like, okay, fine. And then I send them an address, and then I took the handlebar. And then, obviously, what happened? Hey, yo, you have to understand, this handle of yours, when I go downhill, I'm able to control better, you know, because it's a little bit wider and, you know, it's better. I'm like, oh, wow, it feels so great. And they're like, that's what we're trying to tell you. You know, because again, you know, I'm not a cyclist. So sometimes, for instance, they'll say, you know, use this group set. It's going to be better for you because, you know, you keep complaining about the jumps, you know, go from one bar, go to the wide. Yeah. You use this. It's going to be fun. I'm like, oh, my goodness, this is so crazy. Like, I was able to go through the big mountains, and I didn't feel that I ran out of, you know, there was not a big jump. I'm like, how did you do that? I'm like, well, don't worry about that. So that's good. You know, they really, they don't just support, they also help me out because they know that I am totally clueless. So they know better than me what I need. And, you know, and they also help me with, like, for instance, I mean, when you have Open and Tram and Zip on your side, I mean, I can knock at most doors. And I say, hey, some of my supporters include SRAM and Zip and Open. They're like, oh, okay. How much of the whole company do you want again? You know. So yeah. So it's very nice, and it's a privilege I don't take for granted. Yes, I know that I work hard for it, but at the end of the day, you know, I've seen when I'm on those highways, I see people doing some crazy stuff on bicycles. That, you know, it's just they're not attention seeking like me.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us. It's an absolute honor to have you on, and we want to have you back for sure.
Thank you.
Because there's more stories there for sure.
Yeah, there's more to this.
Yeah. Really nice to meet you, Jabig. Thank you for taking the time.
Thanks, man. Yeah, you take care there.
Thank you for having me. So are we done?
Another huge thank you to DJ Jabig for spending some time with us. Absolute pleasure to get to know him a little bit, and we look forward to having him back on the podcast because it's very clear that this guy is not done adventuring and we need to hear more about that. Thank you everybody for listening. Once again, if you are able to support the podcast by leaving us a positive review or rating on whatever podcast app you find the show on, or by sharing content on social media or any of those types of things, or by word of mouth, that is greatly appreciated. We will be back to you very soon with another episode.